On today's episode, we welcome Chris and Adrian to the show, a couple that Liz has helped in her private practice. They share an incredible story of working through struggles and addictions, separations, and learning to love and trust again. After 3 years in an intensive treatment program, Chris learned things about himself and his marriage that changed his life. And Adrian learned patience and experienced tremendous growth as she hung on to hope and learned to forgive. Together, they have grown stronger than ever. We hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome to Stronger Marriage Connection. I'm psychologist Dr. Liz Hale, along with the esteemed professor Dr. Dave Schramm. We together have been dedicating our life's works to bringing you the best we have in valid marital research, along with a few tips and tools to help you create the marriage of your dreams. Now, perhaps, friends, you have been at that moment in marriage when you feel like you cannot take one more step into the dark abyss, especially under the crushing circumstances of addiction. Or you know someone who's been there. It takes tremendous courage to face the demons prepared to destroy the love, loyalty, and faith in yourself and in your partner. Well, our friends Chris and Adrian did just that. They faced their difficult firestorm together and even apart, and they're here to share their story with all of us. Welcome to Stronger Marriage Connection, Chris and Adrian.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Such a pleasure. Now, you've been married for over 7 years today, and you have an almost five-year-old daughter, Loa. Mm-hmm. Where did your love story begin, please? How did you meet, and how long did you date before you knew that, this is the one?
Well, our love story began, I came out to Utah for an LDS mission, and I met a family that I grew close with while I was out here, and their niece was dating Adrian's little brother. So we met through the network.
A lot of networking. Yeah. I was going to say, we dated for about 6 months before we got engaged. And so we were only, it was very quick. It was maybe a little too quick, but it was great. We knew I'd been dating for a while. For Utah culture, I was a little older to be getting married. And I feel like I just had dated enough people that when I met Chris, I was just like, he is so kind. He's so consistent and steady. And so it was just kind of a really easy decision. Like, I felt like I knew pretty fast because it felt very different from other relationships that I've been in.
Got it. Different, but something very familiar about Chris.
Yeah, just really safe and secure and happy. And it was really good.
And Chris, you were born in Australia.
Yes.
Right? Samoan family.
Yeah.
Sydney, and Adrian, Australia. you were born where, Adrian?
I was born in Utah. My dad was a BYU student when I was born, but Hawaii is home for me now.
And Hawaii. That's amazing how you found each other, isn't it?
Yes.
How the worlds collide. Yes.
Literally different parts of the world. So let's dive into your first year or two of marriage. When did you know, Adrian, that Chris was confronting a bigger addiction issue than you had initially realized?
I honestly, for the first year, there were a lot of things that I was like, this feels weird, but I wasn't asking the right questions. I knew that Chris had kind of, I guess what I understood was that he had experimented with substances in high school and kind of growing up. I knew there'd been some things here and there in adulthood. But I kind of just chalked it up to like, oh, that's just, you know, that was him before and now he's this person. So even in our first year of marriage, I actually didn't really know what was going on. There were certain things, but I just wasn't asking the right questions. So he wasn't giving me very truthful answers. So about a little bit after our first anniversary, I caught him, you know, in a lie. And then a lot of things came out, not everything, but a lot of things came out that there had been some substance abuse in our marriage. And I think that's not a familiar world for me. That's just not something I don't really associate with a lot of people who use drugs. Like, that's just not really my circle. And so I think it just kind of seemed very foreign to me. And so I didn't really know what to be watching for. So I think that was when it was kind of shocking. We started going to 12-step programs once he came clean.
I didn't complain. I got caught.
He got caught. Once he got caught, I kind of was like, okay, we just start going to 12-step meetings and talking about it, and then everything's going to be better. Like, it was just kind of like, you take the steps and things are going to be done. And so, but I think it was when it was year two, when I found out I was pregnant, and he kept struggling, that I was like, oh gosh, this is bad, because a kid isn't changing anything. I kind of feel like in my head, it's like, okay, a kid, you know, at least that would be something that would make him change, or like be a wake up call. Yeah. And things actually got worse. And I think that that was when it was very real and very scary for me, was when I was pregnant. And things were so
happy. Yeah.
Understandable, right? The reality really hits home when you have, when you're bringing some life into this world.
Yeah.
And in your painful journey, Chris, kind of setting this up, some of this background and some context, it began many years before this, right? Take us through the, maybe some of the ages and stages of the various addictions and losses you faced up until you met Adrian.
Yeah. You know, just like, you know, any kids, like any kid that's raised in any culture in any time frame, you know, you come across things that you learn really quick that that are, I say this, that traumatize you or hurt you, and there's different forms for various lives. Mine, it was pornography at early stages in my life, very young. But then really it taking an effect around, I think I was about 12 when, and I don't know about open or be about it, but with like when masturbation being introduced that into life. So mixing those two. And then what really sprouted for me was when I got introduced to like alcohol, and then mixing alcohol, and then experimenting with marijuana. So that was around like 14, 15. And the culture that I was raised in is a Polynesian culture. So, you know, it's a very respectful, you have to be very, you have to be strong, and you can't show weakness in certain areas. And you have to be strong for your family and to honor your family. And, but as well as it was just a different ball game, you know, growing up in that area. Like, I couldn't like, hey, Dad, I'm struggling with this, or I was exposed to this growing up. And it's not that they didn't want to hear it. It's just not something that was done in my culture growing up. And so that cycle mixing with the experiences I was having, and then as well as both of my parents are converts to the LDS church. So having that variable in my upbringing, like putting up the good front, and my parents go to church, I go to church every Sunday. So you throw all that in, and it really, it becomes quite a show. A lot of hard ways to cope through trauma stuff. I mean, I've lost family members and things growing up. And so being exposed to all those things, it really, you just kind of move and go with it, and it's kind of getting a survival mode in the sense.
Yeah. And feeling like you had to, keep it secret or hidden, because you kind of had to live one way, or at least kind of outward, you know, show that I'm strong and this is what we believe in religiously, but underlying this was this, I don't know, this, I guess the secret or this hidden part of you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a secret because it was like, I didn't want to disappoint. Just like any kids with their parents, like they want to make their parents proud. And my parents are amazing parents. They're good parents. And they taught me a lot of good things, and I didn't want to let them down. And so when I had my own shortcomings, and it was just, it's like that stalemate, that secret, like, it's like, oh man, I don't want to do that to my mom or dad and tell them this. And, you know, and I did everything for them. I'm the oldest of four. So like I was the natural babysitter when my parents were both working. They were both working in the household I was raised in. And, it was hard, but it was what you had. And at the time I didn't know it was as bad as it was until, you know, as I developed older and realized that I needed to find better coping mechanisms than what I was currently doing with my addiction, going into drug abuse.
So it's interesting about marriage, isn't it? It shows us a mirror of ourselves, things we don't want to see. Is that what you're saying, Chris? Is that when you really realize is in marriage to Adrian, it's like, oh my goodness, this is worse than I realized?
Yeah, 100%. In a way, you know, you being getting into a marriage, it definitely is a mirror. It reflects, you know, you're completely vulnerable. They see who you really are. And if you try to hide it, obviously, like, year into my marriage, it comes out. Like, and so, yeah, it's, you're blending two worlds together. And so you're going to see all the strengths and all the faults, mm-hmm. and everything in between, the good and the sad and the happy. And
Substance abuse certainly affects everyone in the family, doesn't it? Not just the person struggling with it. What were the depth of difficulties like for both of you when the addictions were in full swing? What were you going through during this tumultuous time? Chris and Adrian, I'm sure it was different for both of you, but difficult nonetheless.
Yeah. You want me to start?
You bet.
Okay. I think on my side, so obviously our daughter was born in the time that I was pregnant. So Chris ended up going to treatment. He did a 90-day program. And then while he was in that program, his father passed away from suicide. And so he came home from the treatment to a wife who was about to have a baby, and his whole world was kind of changed. His mom had passed away earlier, so he was the oldest sibling left, and, you know, the oldest sibling, and then the only kind of parent figure almost. But we also were not really in a place to step up and take care of the kids because he had just come out of a 90-day program. So I think that was a pretty low time, was when our baby was little, but I think that kind of helped a little bit with Chris to kind of get things under control. But probably the depths for me was when she was about a year and a half old. Chris started losing jobs every couple of months. He had kind of I couldn't trust him. I started catching him in lots of things. He would come clean about things occasionally, but we kind of refer to that as like letting a little bit out so that the pressure wasn't so high. It was just kind of like, let a little steam out so you don't explode. So every few weeks he would say, hey, I messed up. When in reality, it was like every day things were happening. Yeah. And for me, I really, really wanted to believe him. And I think that was one of my strengths and weaknesses, is like, I want to see the best in people. And that's really good for me in a lot of ways. But also, I didn't want to see things that were happening in my life. I did not want to see reality, I think. I think I was too scared to know what that would mean if my husband was back in addiction, and if it was as bad as deep in my soul I felt that it was, if that makes sense.
Oh, gosh.
And so I really felt very unstable mentally. I didn't have a good idea of what reality was. I think my family, who loved me, my friends, were kind of like, you know, I don't know, that might not be, you know, the best thing, or are you sure Chris is okay, or whatever. But I kind of just really didn't want to see it. And because of that, I was in a constant state of anxiety. We had no trust at all. I felt physically ill really often because I knew my home was not a safe place. I never knew who was going to walk in the door. And it was just a very scary and unstable time. So that was probably the depths for me, is knowing I couldn't trust Chris to keep Loa or I safe physically or emotionally. And that was a really scary feeling, because that wasn't Chris that I knew.
Right. And fell in love with. Yes. Yeah. Incredibly painful. Yeah. And Adrian, toughest part for you, the lowest low. Chris, Chris, I'm sorry. What was the lowest low for you?
Just that I couldn't do what I said I would do when I made those promises. Like, no, I got a daughter coming. We're going to get this straight. I need to figure this out. And just like making those promises at the foot of my bed and then not keeping them, like literally in the next hour or later on that day or a couple days, or maybe I'd have a couple weeks, it just fall apart. That was the torment. I guess that was just not being able to like have any substance to my words, to the promises I make, and therefore not being able to trust myself, because I, how could she trust me when I can't even keep my own end of the deal down? So it, that was very low for me. And towards the end of my addiction, when I was in my active addiction, I guess there was a point in my life, there was multiple rock bottoms. A key moment for me was sitting in a jail cell and just thinking about, it was like one of those fork in the road moments where I was just thinking about, you know, I could go this route and not care, because, you know, all like the story in my head, you know, my parents have passed away. I'm 25. You know, my daughter will never meet my side of the family, like things that hurt dearly. And I was like, well, since I'm hurt and I don't care to live. And so it was that route and go that way. And then there was this other route that came to my mind where I kept thinking about how much that hurt me so much when my father had passed away. The pain I felt from that and the sorrow, especially after he knowing that he had his first granddaughter coming on the way and that she would be named after his wife, my mom, Leiloa. And so that one, and then going into treatment and then coming out to that, like that one hurt me so bad that I thought of Loa and I was like, well, if I die, if I go this route and die, like she's going to feel that. And I don't want, like, this hurts me. I can barely handle it. Why would I do that to a little girl? And so I was like, well, I think I have my answer. I think I need to go this route and at least do something different to where she can at least have her father around. And that's when we're at that point where I was like, even if I'm like, I wanted Adrian to divorce me because I'm not such a good person, but she's not, like she said earlier, she has no idea about this world of drugs and lying. And she was just raised in a great place and in a safe place. And she didn't know the key things to look for in an abusive emotional relationship where it's like lying and no trust and stuff like that. So I was at the point where I was like, yeah, you need to move on and find someone who will do what they say they'll do. And so that was a pivotal moment for me too, because it started me on my journey to wanting recovery for myself and ultimately.
We'll be right back after this brief message. And we're back. Well, let's dive right in.
Wow. So tell us about a little bit about that then, that you had this moment, you're feeling like, hey, this is the fork in the road, I've got to go. And then you decided, you know what, I'm going to try this intensive journey. I'm going to go all in and work on this. Tell us about the facility that you discovered, right? I think right there in Farmington, Utah, right? Tell us a little bit about that experience.
So that experience, yeah, saved my life. It just opened so many doors for me. I stayed at a facility up in Farmington. It's a nonprofit organization called Red Barn Academy. It is free for any student who applies and is accepted to the program. How it works is the students that stay there for the 2 years, they commit to stay there in-house 24/7 for 2 years, and they're in a safe environment and they just work 6 days a week. Those 2 years. And so, and the different enterprises. So Red Barn has a thrift store, a construction company, a moving company, and in turn, the revenue created by those enterprises helps open more beds and help us build more room and board for future students. So being in Red Barn and being in a safe place where I could just focus on me, especially the first 3 months of a student, he's not allowed to have contact with anyone. It's kind of like a blackout period. And so it's really being there, it allowed me to just put the world on pause, everything on pause, and just look at my inner self while I'm in these just working environments in a safe place. And there's about 60 plus students there. And it just, 7 months into the program, I started liking who I was becoming. And then I received I was keeping in touch with, after the 3 months, I kept in touch with Adrian's mom and just to, you know, keep tabs on Age and especially Loa and see how they're doing. I remember going back and forth with Laurie, and my mother-in-law shared this letter with me. And basically the context of what she said in there was, you know, if you do things for other people, you'll only resent them. And with where I was at, and I was thinking and looking back on my journey of recovery, I was like, yeah, I've been trying to get sober for my daughter at the time. I've been trying to get sober for my marriage. And I tried to be sober to please my parents or things. But I never once thought of like, hey, man, like, what about you? Why do you want to be sober? And so being there, I realized after that letter and then thinking about it, pondering about it, I was like, yeah, I just want to be happy for me. I just want to be so I just want to have peace. Like, life wasn't the greatest growing up, but I also loved it growing up too. And so from what I had, like, I just want to find myself and just be at peace with what has happened to me, what I'm going through and what's going to happen, and just enjoy and experience life. And doing that, being at Red Barn, it provided me like other like-minded individuals who were stuck in the same rut I was stuck in. The make your promise, I'll be clean, and then right back into lying to your loved ones with great support systems and right back into it. And so really Red Barn Academy has really provided a place for me to reinvent and love myself and respect myself and my word. And so having that trust in myself, now I'm able to, and I got lucky while I was there. I actually ended up staying another year. So I was there for 3 years. And I talked with Adrian about it because we got to talk about 14 months into the program and just reevaluate some things. And my third year, I was able to date her and we just, you know, casually just reintegrated back into life together. And I've been graduated from the program about 6 months, a little over 6 months now. And it's been a blessing. It's been a lot easier being able to trust yourself and then show up and hold your end of the deal as someone else who's been doing the whole time like her. And so it makes our relationship a lot more fulfilling and gratifying. You know, it's,
I can only imagine. Goodness, Adrian, here, I mean, we're thinking 90-day program is one thing, right? And then we're thinking of a 2 or 3 year program. My goodness, did you ever feel like, I don't know if I can do this? You ever feel like throwing in the towel? And then that's my question for you. And then Chris, did you ever fear that maybe at the end of this lengthy program, Adrian may not be there after all? You first, Adrian, what did you feel like throwing in the towel? Did you come close?
Yeah, I filled out divorce papers his first week in his program. It was awful. I cried the whole time. It was not fun. But because of how bad things were, I kind of, you know, and he, like he said, he really did tell me, like, you don't deserve this and you should divorce me. And I was like, with pleasure, I would love to. No,
you're right.
Yes, but no, but really, I think for me too, I felt like divorce was kind of saying, okay, like, you're not going to dictate how my life goes anymore. I need to sever those ties. So yeah, I filled out divorce papers his first week. But like he said, there was a blackout period. And so I kind of just figured I needed to wait until I could talk to him. Our blackout period, we thought was not going to be as long as it was, but it ended up being about 13 and a half months. Yeah.
Of no talking.
Of no talking. So he got to talk to my mom, but no letters, no phone calls. We got one phone call on Christmas because of a miscommunication, and we had a minute, literally 1 minute. Yeah. And I just said, I love you, but I am not going to ever let you treat me like that again. Like, I'm not going back to that life.
She planted her stake.
Yeah, like, I planted my stake. And that was our 1 minute. So we did have 1 minute literally in the 13 months, but no letters. He didn't get to see me or Loa, nothing. So for me, I kind of just, you know, I thought, okay, I'll wait until the blackout period is done. And then it kind of just kept getting like a longer thing. And then I know this sounds weird, but there was just kind of this feeling of just kind of sit tight, like don't send the papers without being able to talk to Chris. And that felt kind of like giving up some power because I kind of finally felt like I'm in control of how this is going to go. Not that I wanted to control him, but I just had felt very powerless. His choices, I felt like, dictated my choices. That was kind of my mindset at that point. It was, if Chris does this, then I have to respond in this way. Or if this is happening, I have to react in this way. And so like divorcing him kind of was my way of like, no, I'm in charge now of how I'm going to respond. This is my action that I'm going to be able to take. Anyway, but I definitely thought of throwing in the towel. I got very close. But when I got to see him 13 months into the program, he was the person that I thought I married in the first place. He felt different. And it was, I always used to say, everyone loves Chris except for Chris. Everyone, like when people meet him, they're so drawn to him. He's so warm. He's so kind, genuinely. But he hated himself because of that cycle that we've talked about. And when I saw him for the first time in 13 months, I felt that he loved himself. And I felt that he just felt like a whole person that I'd never seen him be before. And so that was kind of when I was like, okay, let's actually maybe revisit this. And I was grateful that I kind of, you know, in recovery, they say one day at a time. And for me, it was just kind of one day at a time. I'm going to keep the divorce papers in my back pocket, figuratively, but let's just take it one day at a time and see where this goes. Because it was important to me to keep my family as a family unit if it was possible. I didn't want to do it just because of Lola or just because I didn't want Chris to go off the deep end if I left. But when I saw him again, it was kind of like, that's a person that I could be married to and that I would feel okay being my, like the father figure, not just like the person that fathered my daughter, but the person that's in her life every day and like teaching her and raising her with me. And so, yeah, it was kind of after that it kind of started to turn around a little bit.
That kind of separation reminds me of military families. I mean, Chris, you were fighting a war, right? And Adrian, you were as well, trying to keep things afloat for you and Lola. You were working and caring for her. Unbelievable what you two have been through. Congratulations.
Yeah, this is incredible, this journey. We like to say, we've said it before here on this podcast, that the happy and healthy we starts with a happy and healthy me, right? In this personal growth, this journey. And so, Adrian, you said about 13 months, right? You saw him, you said, okay, I'm going to... was it then when you said, okay, you know, we're going to get through this? Or you said, okay, where I'm going to continue this journey and see how it goes. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it was more of like, we'll see. It was that I was willing to see instead of like, please sign here. You know, it was more of like, okay, let's actually see, like if he can maintain this, like let's try and talk and we'll see. It wasn't a sure. And I was grateful because he was very respectful and did not expect anything from me. It was very like, he was very clear of just like, whatever you feel. I didn't feel like he didn't seem entitled to our marriage or seem entitled to being in our home. And actually I just remembered for the first little bit, we were talking about when he came home after the 2 years that he would live somewhere else and we would kind of date each other. But when he did, like he said, he extended and did a third year. And because he did the third year, we were able to kind of date more while he was gone. And so that's why we just had him come home after that. But I was very cautiously optimistic. I was, emphasis on the cautious, probably more cautious than optimistic. But that did bring a spark of optimism to me and hope because when I dropped him off, I really didn't ever want to see him again after that, honestly. Like I knew that I would. But at least that version of him, I was like, I never want to know this person ever again, because he was so far from my best friend. Like we were friends before we dated and and our whole marriage, we've been good friends. We laugh, we have fun. We talk, we veg out and do movies. Like we just are friends. And he just wasn't even my friend anymore. It was just, when I dropped him off, it was just, I did not like him at all. Like it was he was very far from who he had been to me.
So what changed? Was it a year or two? I'm just curious. Year two. And then was it a mutual decision? Or Chris, did you say, I love this path. I want to go another year. When did you say, we're going to, you know, work this out and you are going to move back home? You know, when were those discussions had?
I guess it kind of came around when I committed to a third year in the program, because at around 16, 15 months into the program, you know, the students start thinking about, their future, if they want to move on and graduate, or if they want to do another year. And then a student can stay as long as they want in that program. And so I had thought to myself, and actually what you were saying earlier, Liz, like, have I ever thought, what if I graduate after 2 years, will Adrian still be with me? Oh, that came across my mind all the time. But I had a rebuttal, or I had an answer with that. Well, then are you just getting sober for Adrian and for your marriage? So it really pushed back to the whole reason why I wanted to do this, because I want to be sober for me. I just want to be happy and be at peace. And so that also came into play when I was thinking about the third year. And I was like, well, if I wasn't married to Adrian and didn't have Loa, and I was just a single guy here trying to get some years of sobriety down, my chances of surviving or living life after I graduate are going to be much higher if I stay a third year. Plus, I can give back to the program that has been amazing to me. And so it was a no-brainer. And then I had to factor her in. So that's when I made the phone call, and we talked about me staying a third year. And then that's kind of when, I feel like that's when we were shifting. She's like, okay. And I just told her, like, hey, I just want you to know, because this affects you as well, because I could at least be working or helping out financially if I do graduate after 2 years. And so I think that's where it starts shifting towards that. Mm-hmm. And then there's benefits from staying a third year. Mm-hmm. I was able to date and court her, and we introduced ourselves, because while I'm there changing, she's also changing and becoming who she has been the past 3 years. And mm-hmm. so blending of the two worlds was, it was cool. It was cool to see it and see how far she's become and how strong she's become and independent, and then also to be able to show up and just be who I am.
That's amazing. Yeah, growth for both of you. Then it sounds like that Adrian, that time that you are growing as a person and as a mother, right? And you're both experiencing this growth and then start dating again. And I think that's just goes to show, man, putting in that. Marriage takes work, and it's effort to work on ourselves to make sure that we're in a good place. So amazing. Wow.
That's a mature conversation, isn't it? For 20-something-year-olds to have, Dave.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Quite something. And Chris, you've been sober for how long now, my friend? And what's helping you remain sober, please?
I just want it for me. To be the same person in every room, that's one of the core things that I wanted to have as an attribute or a characteristic, whatever you want to call it. Like, that was something I wanted to take away when I graduated Red Barn. I'm just me everywhere.
Be the same in every room. Is that what you're saying?
Everywhere.
I love that.
Yeah, to be the same person. Because with the sneakiness and the lying growing up, that's unheard of to do that. So to do the opposite, do something different, to want something different and be something different. You got to do those things. What keeps me sober today is that I just want my peace of mind. And I just want, and which I'm so happy, even on my hardest days since graduating the program, it is literally wonderful. Like, those hard, I still have shortcomings and little temper tantrums or life's not fair moments that I used to have before, but it's like, I get to just step back and be like, it's not that big of a deal, man. And it's like, huh, it's not, we're not juggling lies and trying to hide and be four different people in every room. And, tell what lie to her and lie to this person where I'm at. It's just like, we're just going to just hang out and just see what Laura wants to do and play with her and see what she wants to learn.
So do you count your sobriety as those 3 years in Red Barn Academy plus another 7 months?
Yeah. Yeah. 3 years and 7 months, I think.
That's fantastic. One thing I loved that you said earlier was about boredom, how boredom is welcomed in sobriety. Do you mind saying more about that?
Yes. Like, what? Individuals that are in full-blown addiction and you've used it, whether it's because they're chasing, numbing something or running from something, or sometimes the people are just in it for the thrill, whatever the behavior is behind the addiction, being bored is like not what is on your radar. They get high and they explore and enjoy the thrill, and then they crash and there's a low, and then they just try to balance that back and forth. But I think the best recovery, man, is just right in the even, just to be there and just to enjoy the boredom, just to do the laundry, the house chores, you know, go to work, show up, clock in, back home. And just the stuff I used to try to avoid before. It's just, it's simple. It's fun. And if it's a harder day, then just make it to your pillow and it resets tomorrow and try again. And it's good.
I think that's just amazing. I love your other advice too, is about playing the tape through. Tell us about that, because I thought that was great for any of us, whether we're addicted to alcohol, drugs, or food.
Yeah, playing the tape through is just one of the phrases that we had at Red Barn to help with students when a lot of students. So it's not a, you don't, there's no guard dogs, no watchtowers or anything like that. Like if a student wants to leave the program, at any point in the program, they can leave. And so a lot of the times the students would want to leave because they were missing their wife or their kids, or they just want to go get high. And so what we would always say is, we'll play the tape through. Let's see what happens. You leave Red Barn. Where do you go? I'll probably go over to his house or some drug dealer's house and pick up some dope and get high. Okay. And then what? I'd be high and enjoy it for, you know, X amount of hours. And then I'd have to do it again. Okay. And then what? Where are you going to stay? So asking these questions, and then what? What then? And then what? You know, it helps you really just see like, wow, that's a lot of, you know, lots of twists and turns in that path. Maybe I should, or I could just stay and just push through this hard day today and see what tomorrow brings. And it really just brings things into perspective and helps you get into that cognitive thinking instead of that emotional or that pull, that whatever the craving is or the behavior is behind the addiction.
I think that sounds great. Play the tape through. Let's talk next about trust. Adrian and Chris, what have you learned and how have you learned to trust yourselves and each other? Adrian, you first. How have you learned to trust Chris? That wouldn't be easy.
Yeah, we're still in the process, right? We talk a lot. One of the hardest things for us a lot of the times is he's like, I'm like 3.5 years sober. And I'm like, and only half of those is with me. And so kind of a lot of, you know, our experience together, I have a lot more years of him lying to me than I do him being honest with me, like in my home. So it's getting better. We've definitely gotten better, but that's one of those things that it can be hard. We still have days where, you know, something will feel a little off, like something will just remind me of something. There's circumstances that line up that remind me of old behaviors and I'll get triggered and feel panicky and all those things. And you know, Chris is so good. We have to talk about it. We have to talk it through. But I mean, it is a process, you know, trust was damaged really badly. Like we had none. And so to build it back up, it's a daily thing of communication. I think another thing I didn't trust myself. Like I said earlier, I was essentially lying to myself as well, ignoring signs and ignoring things that were wrong in my home and in my family. And I lost trust in myself because I ignored that intuition or those feelings of things being off. I ignored them so many times that I think I lost trust in myself too. So therapy has been really helpful for me, to trust myself again, and then so that I can trust Chris. So I think just really, we have to work really hard every day. We have to be very open about feelings. We have to be very open about triggers or concerns. And we have to be really patient with each other because it's a painful thing to rebuild. It is a hard thing to rebuild, but we're getting there.
And so rewarding, right?
Yes, so rewarding. It's so funny. I'm like, I didn't realize how great marriage can be when you trust each other. when you believe what your spouse says, like shouldn't be a foreign thing for me, but it was a little bit.
I get it. For so many couples, listening get it. Chris, what about trust? What about trusting self?
You cannot, trust yourself. Well, first, you can't have a marriage without trust or any healthy relationship. Even just your closest as friendships or relationships with your family members, you need to be, there's a two-way connection of trust. And I love what you guys said earlier, what you say on your podcast about to have a healthy we, sorry if I, as a healthy we, you have to have a healthy me. And so it has been it's been cool to see the big contrast between the two. Life before Red Barn, but there's no trust, not even in myself, and then in our relationship, and juggling all that, versus now, 7 months in after graduating, and actually even longer, we've been dating the past year. So just to have that trust, and for her, like, she's still, I mean, there was a lot of trauma and PTSD, like trust PTSD that came for her, because I would always tell her I'm in this place when I'm really not, because I'm trying to figure out a way to go get high or pick something up. And it's like, those moments still happen now to this day. But what's cool is to be able to be, have an open and honest dialogue about it. And she's like, I'm feeling this way. This is what's off. I'm like, it's okay. There was traffic, 10 minutes. That's where I was at. I don't know what else you want me to say. And then be able to have the time that we've had together too has helped that trust heal over time as well. Just to show yourself and be consistent. But yeah, trusting yourself and then being able to be in a relationship where trust is required, especially in a marriage, night and day difference. It is nice to know that she's got my back and I got her back, and we have that. It's just easier to be teammates and work as together as a team when there's trust and you are okay with that.
You know, and you guys are right. Trust is, for me, it's really the foundation. Mm-hmm. You said this is the foundation of relationships. And I'd like to say that trust is slowly earned and easily burned. And so it sounds like it's taking you time. So it was burned. It was burned over and over. And it took you some time to really rebuild that trust, which is awesome. And probably even still a process today. So now I've got a question for you. So for couples who are struggling today with whatever, all kinds of addictions, for either one or both partners, and they've lost hope in the future, in their relationship, what advice do you have for them? And so that's the question, but a little caveat, because I want our listeners to understand that each situation is different, right? There may be abuse or neglect or violence or things. And so, you know, one person choosing to stay may not mean that that's the best option for everyone. So I want to make that clear right up front. But for you and your situation, and there's some listeners who are here, do you have advice for those who've lost hope and who are really struggling?
It's hard. I'm glad that you gave that caveat, because that's kind of a concern whenever I talk about our story, because I would never want someone to be stuck in the shoes that I was in when I dropped him off at his program. That is not a way to live, honestly. And it's not happy for either person. I think just seeing your partner's efforts and giving them credit for trying. I'm so grateful that Chris cared enough to try, and it took a lot for him to get to that point. But I think, like he said, like, neither of us are perfect at all in this relationship, and we still have things we're overcoming. Like, there was a lot of years of Chris's, certain behaviors of Chris's that he's having to reverse, and he's put in a lot of work. But I think one of the ways, what I would just encourage people is to just give credit where credit's due. Like, if your partner is trying, I know it can be very, very painful when they slide back or when there's, you know, a bump in the road. But I think I would have never wanted to go through what Chris went through either. I hated my situation, but I also feel so much empathy for Chris, because I know that it wasn't fun for him. He wasn't doing those things because his life was better because he was abusing substances. But so I think just giving grace and giving credit for someone who's trying. And I think, so if there is a slide back, it's okay to be hurt, but look at the things that they're doing to try. That's from my perspective. And then I think what Chris does for me that I think helps in our relationship is that he's okay with me being hurt. He gives me space to be hurt, or he gives me space to feel kind of triggered or nervous. And I think that's kind of how we've made it work, is that we're just giving each other the benefit of the doubt. We're appreciative of what both person in the relationship is doing to heal and to repair the relationship. And so I think, just be gracious. Give credit where you can, even when you're hurt, even when it's hard. Feel the feelings of being hurt, but also see what your partner is doing to try.
Mm, that's great. What about you, Chris? Advice or for those who are struggling?
Well, for sure. When it comes to, man, life is already hard as it is for everyone. Everyone has their own personal trials and hurdles. And I, and then the beauty about having a marriage in this life is you have someone with you that is willing to help lift you when you're burdened, when you're going through your hard times, and vice versa. And so any advice for couples out there who are facing divorce or going through it, my advice is just to remember that, you know, a marriage, I like to look at it, I love sports, so we're a team. And so it takes both of us to get to the end goal and where we want to be at. And so as long as both parties, both people in the relationship are trying, I think that's a huge part, putting in the effort. And then accountability as well, I think, is another big part too. When you are together in a relationship, you notice a lot of things that they do, but everyone has blind spots. And so being able to be accountable to the things you don't see that you do, that they're trying to let you know where you fall short in or where you could use a little bit more work. And that goes back to the trusting them, trusting their feedback, and make sure you trust them to know that they're giving you feedback from a place of love. From, like, I love what Adrian said earlier with having the best in mind for them. And remember, life is hard. Why? You know, you found your loved one, whoever it was, and you were like, hey, let's do this thing together. Let's do this thing life together and go through it. And that's where, for me, and I appreciate for my relationship with Adrian, we were friends way before. And it developed, we're lovers now, and we're a husband and wife. And it's just so, it's cool. Like, to, when both players are playing on and heading the same way in the relationship, it makes life a lot more easier and fun and beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Fun is the operative term there. Love that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey, one question we like to ask each of our guests is, what do you think is the key to a stronger marriage connection? What do you think, Adrian first and then Chris?
Yeah, we've touched on it a lot, trust. But I think too, it's hard. There's so many. I think in this conversation, the thing that just keeps coming to my mind is just loving each other and giving grace to each other. I think, like Chris mentioned, it's hard, but there was a point in your life where you decided, like, this is the person that I want to do life with. And you know that life is hard before you get married, right? Like, you've gone through things before. So just that should be the person that you offer the most grace to and the most love to. A lot of times I feel like we show love to people who we barely know. We're a lot more gracious and kind to people that we don't know. And then the people closest to us get the worst of us a little bit. But I think giving grace to one another and working together to and just showing real love as unconditional as you can in the healthiest way that you can do that, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. What about you, Chris?
It's like a relationship is just like a plant. It's just like recovery. What we say in recovery, brushing your teeth. When you brush your teeth, you prevent yourself from getting cavities, and you do it every day. There's not just one day where you wake up and you're like, oh, I brushed my teeth yesterday, we're good. We're there. It's like, no, if you don't brush your teeth, you have the possibility of losing your teeth. Same thing with sobriety. It's there's no end. It's a process. It's something you just keep to maintain a certain level, and that's sobriety. Relationship, you have to court each other, you have to date. It's something you're always working on, and if you're not working on it, you start losing some things in there. So it's just like a plant, you got to water it daily. We got to be a team and then remind each and help serve each other. And like, I love what she said about being grace, and I think for those out there, you have to work on, it's hard because, like, as a married couple and you go through life, there's some points in life where you become like roommates and it's like, hi, yeah, I work. Most of the kids today. Well, you got a child today. Yeah, I got, but you got to put in the effort. You have to date each other and have personal time, not just dating, just even just pillow talk and just talk, check in with each other. That's a big thing that I've loved a lot since being home and since being able to have this second chance in marriage. It's just to check in with her, see how things are going, you know, express your thoughts and feelings, and just that will help you set you on the right path to just grow into something beautiful in life.
I love that.
Yeah, I love it.
You know, one of you earlier said, we just feel really lucky, you know, and it was like, when you said that word lucky, I think it was you, Adrian, I thought that is not necessarily a word I would think about. Meaning you put in the labor, the love, sweat and tears, I like to say. You had the courage to find a program to potentially divorce Adrian Chris, and also to hang in there, to pause for just a little bit. Talk about courage and commitment and humility. Luck doesn't come to mind when I think of how you've gotten to where you are today. It just is only with love, sweat, and tears. So impressed.
Thank you.
Yes. Now, you've certainly, man, you certainly inspired us. We're so grateful for your time and sharing what you have shared. Is there a takeaway message from each of you? We call it our takeaway of the day that each of you would like to share with our listeners. Anything that you want to leave with them?
Just for me, for those couples out there who aren't sure, I guess some questions to ask yourselves is, you know, do you still want to be partners with them, with your significant other? Do you still want to do this with them? If so, if yes, and if they want to as well, then I think it's worth it. And take our story for what it is, because that's where we were at after I made that third year commitment and after being home. And we still have hard days. Life is not all butterflies and rainbows since we've been graduating. It takes work. But to just understand where each other are at and just know, hey, we can do this. At the end of the day, you're my wife and we love each other. How can we get through this? I guess that's the drive home message for those who are thinking or who are going through that. Just reevaluate, look into your inner selves and see if that's something you want. And if so, it can be done. Like, take our story for what it is. And if both parties want to be together and fight through it, it's a lot of work, but it's worth it. And it's beautiful. It's priceless.
That's great. Yeah. Well, Adrian, what about you? What's your takeaway today?
I think my takeaway is invest in yourself too. I also love what Chris, you know, mentioned earlier that he loved what you guys normally say. We didn't listen to all of your podcasts, but I really think for anyone in my situation or Chris's situation, I think loving yourself enough to want things to be different is really important. So for me, I wish a long time ago I would have put more effort into myself to be in a healthy place that I would have been able to say, you know, Chris, this isn't acceptable and I'm not going to let you be in my home if these things are happening or whatever. Obviously, I believe that our timeline and how things happened in our marriage and in our home was exactly how it was supposed to be. But I think if I were to have a takeaway, it would just be make sure that you're taking care of yourself. Make sure that you're in a healthy place, because you can't help somebody in addiction if you're struggling so hard. You can't, because typically what that looks like is you're accommodating them. You're trying to prevent them from having any consequences for their actions. You're trying to not set them off, because if you say the wrong thing, they're going to go get high. For me, I just wish that I would have had more love for myself, self-respect, that wasn't a behavior that I would put up with, if that makes sense. So I think, and then for Chris, you know, what changed for him was doing it because he loved himself, not because he hated himself, not because he wanted to do things for other people, but because that's who he needed to do it for. So I think for both of us, we are here because we put effort into ourselves. We went to therapy, we went to treatment, and because of that, we're able to show up for each other in a way healthier way. And we're both happier showing up for the other person too, because we're happy with ourselves, we're happy with our life. And then it just is a bonus that we have a spouse that we love that's healthy too and happy too. So just, I think putting effort into yourself and being in a healthy place yourself is really important.
Yeah. So, so important. Thank you. Yeah. Liz, what about you? What's your takeaway of the day?
So Dave, you know, I really do love that healthy me, healthy we, right? And that's Chris and Adrian are a great example of that. And I love your mother-in-law's letter to you that she wrote, Chris, of if you do things for other people, you just will learn to resent them. You've got to do it for yourself. I just thought that was beautifully stated. And I'm so in touch that it's your mother-in-law that was really this bridge between you and Adrian for really quite some time.
Yeah.
That's a very loving woman, your mother-in-law, yes. Your mother.
Yes.
And what about you, Dan? What's your greatest takeaway from our time today with Chris and Adrian?
Yeah, this has been so inspiring. So thank you again. I think mine comes down to, and I've thought about this, I think it's better choices lead to better chances. And what I mean by that is that the small little choices, whether it's in, or the big choices, the choice to, I need some help, I'm going to go to the to get some, whether it's therapy or addiction recovery or whatever those programs are. Better choices relate to, you know, this intentional consistency, Chris, that you talked about, that marriage relationships, it takes, we'll just kind of naturally drift apart if we just kind of let things go. But if we're intentionally choosing to make our you know, a priority, first make sure that we're in a good place. And then, hey, what can I do for you, for our daughter? But it's those small little choice. We make all kinds of choices. These decisions really determine our destiny. So that's my takeaway. These better choices lead to better chances in our relationships.
Mm-hmm. Love it. We just want to thank you again for sharing from the heart with us today. Dear Chris and Adrian, we're in awe of what you two have built together. And we want you to know that we're standing for you and your beautiful marriage and family. Loa, happy birthday to Loa coming up.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Liz. Thank you.
For well, that's all now for now, our friends. Thank you so much for tuning in and we'll see you next time.
And just remember, it's the small and simple changes that create a stronger marriage connection. Take care now.
Thanks for joining us today. Hey, do us a favor and take a few minutes to subscribe to our podcast and the Utah Marriage Commission YouTube channel, where you can watch this and every episode of the show. When you hit the like button and leave a comment, your feedback helps us improve the show. And don't forget to share this episode with a friend. You can also follow and connect with us on Instagram at Stronger Marriage Life and on Facebook at Stronger Marriage. Be sure to share with us what topics you want us to explore or what you loved about today's episode. If you want even more resources to improve your relationship connection, visit our website at strongermarriage.org, where you'll find free workshops, webinars, relationship surveys, and more. Each episode of Stronger Marriage Connection is hosted and sponsored by the Utah Marriage Commission at Utah State University. And finally, a big thanks to our producers Rex Polanis and Alexis Alcott and the team at Utah State University. And you, our audience, you make this show possible.